This is Rebecca Lowe, or Rebecca Lua, if you listen to Suboptimal Radio, and you are listening to Men in Blazers on the NBC Sports Network.
It's unbelievable!
From the Embassy Row studios in the crap part of Soho, it's the Men in Blazers podcast, Rog.
Oh, Dave.
We survived Men in Blazers show 5, Rog, last night. A Halloween special.
Many people agreed it was in their top 5.
Wow.
Men in Blazers.
I'm still thinking about it.
It was, I got to tell you.
Yeah.
The time they put us on TV, 10 o'clock.
Eastern.
Roughly matched up against halftime of Monday Night Football.
Yeah.
I sit there for the hour before watching whichever glorious game is on.
Uh-huh.
Just praying for a blowout. Damn you, Cowboys. Damn you, honestly. I can't tell you what agonies I go through.
Yeah, I'm more ambivalent about it. Because sometimes, Rog, our 10 p.m. show is our highest rated show. Sometimes it's our midnight airing. Sometimes it's the one that airs 6:30 the next Saturday morning. We'll take our viewers anytime they're ready to watch us, Rog.
I just knew it was not a good sign when Jerry Jones marched down from the owner's box towards the sideline. Who does he think he is, Vincent Tan?
Yeah, exactly. Or even worse, Jose Mourinho.
Talking about American sport.
The World Series, Rog. From this morning's New York Times, the newspaper of record, perhaps the most compelling statement about baseball's relative standing among American sports fans is this. Last summer's World Cup match between the United States and Portugal drew 25 million viewers, roughly double that of the World Series opener. Take that, baseball. Amazing, Rog. It's an amazing stat.
Yeah, I mean, it's not just the number of fans.
Yeah.
It's also the age of them. I think baseball's avid fan age is around 45 plus.
Yeah, it's our age, Rog.
I find it very sad, David. Mm-hmm. It makes me incredibly sad. I mean, we've talked about
you baseball. You love baseball. You properly love baseball.
It's like chess with chewing tobacco. We've talked about it a couple of times. Mm-hmm. But I'm also sad because baseball seems to be killing itself a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Barnacle is a gentleman I spoke to about this recently. He assures me the game is in rude health, that the owners are making more money than ever before.
Uh-huh.
But there's like this strange mix of apathy and self-satisfaction that surrounds Major League Baseball that's allowed it to kind of drift in towards irrelevance and decline, and it's all self-inflicted.
Yeah.
Was there a time that you loved baseball?
Not really. I mean, I actually have not watched the World Series at all this year, and I quite enjoy baseball.
I haven't watched
baseball.
A single pitch.
I haven't been to a single baseball game this year. That doesn't happen very often. I'm a big basketball fan, Rog. My new sport, though, the PBR, professional bull riding. I am just addicted to the bull riding right now. The season just ended, but I'm going to take you to Madison Square Garden when it comes here
in January. Wait, David.
I know, no bushwhacker though, sadly.
I am shocked.
Amazing.
One of the things that's not happened to me in this world.
Yeah.
When I was in university, a very good friend of mine, Dan Harvard, either told me that I would be well-known or homeless.
Yeah.
Those are my options.
Yeah.
And I always thought I'd gravitate towards the latter.
Yeah.
In all seriousness. And I'm surprised I didn't never panned out, which is one of the careers I imagined for myself, was a clown at the rodeo.
A rodeo clown.
I imagine that would be something that I would probably, God, would probably naturally, like Manu Bol with
the rodeo clown.
Not knowing he was good at basketball, but becoming good at basketball.
The rodeo clown at the PBR, I think his name is Clint Rasmussen, Rasmussen. He is incredibly good. But the guys who are the decoys
so
for the
brave.
Bulls, the fighters,
so
the
brave.
Fighters are amazing.
That's who I wanted to be.
What they do. One of those fighters.
If any fighters, rodeo fighters, listen to us as GFOPs, can you drop us an email? I've got a couple of career questions to talk to you about. But when I arrived in this country in the mid-90s, baseball was king.
Yeah.
There was the Yankees and the Mariners. I remember getting a slice of pizza and the pizza guy telling me the Yankees and the Marineros and pointing excitingly at the screen. It was John Olerud, Edgar Martinez, the Baltimore Orioles, Armando Benitez.
Yeah.
And then the Braves of Maddox and Tom Glavine.
Yeah.
I mean, baseball seemed to have so many heroes.
Yeah.
So much narrative.
Yeah.
And it seems to have lost both of those things, David. Narrative. Now, it shocks me when you do go to Yankee Stadium now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, to me, that is a place that should be kind of rife with tradition and ritual and ways that they scream at you to make some noise. And the sound system there is utterly bonkers. It's like being at a teen disco. I don't know. It's a sport that seems to not appreciate its best assets and the loss of narrative. I find it shocking. I find it reversible. I think think it's incredibly reversible. But right now, when I see a little kid, like a 7-year-old or 8-year-old in baseball uniform going off to play,
yeah,
I almost pity them.
Yeah.
Probably how people felt about soccer playing kids in the 1980s.
Yeah.
I will also say Madison Bumgarner.
Yeah.
It's one of my new favourite names in American sport. Sounds like the kind of guy who would write us a Raven, Dave.
Yeah, exactly. It's a very good American name. We've got a packed show today, Rog.
Oh, Dave.
Yeah.
It's my anniversary today.
It is. Happy anniversary, Rog.
Thanks, man. I don't like birthdays, but I love my anniversary.
We're talking about your wedding anniversary,
yeah.
I assume.
I like it even more than Rosamund Pike in Gone Girl. I also like yesterday, you and I started to talk about songs, about love songs.
Wait a second, Roger. How are you and Mrs. B going to celebrate your anniversary? What number is this?
It's number 87.
Yeah, it's not. You just can't remember.
It feels like I can.
Yeah.
It's whatever is ivory, but they've changed it now. They don't call it ivory because that's not PC. They're scared.
Can you just give me a number? How many years have you been married?
They say it's about animals. I've been 14 years.
Wow, congratulations, Roger. So what are you and Mrs. B going to do to celebrate this momentous occasion?
We're going to get together.
Yeah.
And we're going to listen to the pod. So what I say,
By the way, that is almost certainly true. My notes will arrive tomorrow.
I can't tell you what I'm going to do, but I can tell you it's going to involve I Want to Know What Love Is by Foreigner.
Oh, you love that song.
Definitely in my top five power ballads alongside Paul Weller's You Do Something to Me.
Uh-huh.
In my life, there's been heartache and pain.
Yeah.
I don't know if I can face it again.
Mm-hmm.
Can't stop now. I've traveled so far to change this lonely life. I played this for Dave yesterday while we were getting ready for the show, right, Dave?
You did.
We talked about love. Do you remember what you told me you loved?
No.
Yes.
My children.
Yes. Your employees.
My employees. And making money.
Yes.
Amazing. And you said, not necessarily in that order, which was very rude.
Also on my anniversary.
Yeah.
There was an amazing feature. This connects loosely to it, but we should do a segment on this show this week in Matthew McConaughey, the prime mover, the wave maker.
Oh, the prime mover, the wave maker. I love that GQ interview.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Honestly, everybody pick up GQ, go to GQ.com, read the interview with Matthew McConaughey in the back of a limo driving down the 405 in Los Angeles.
It's loosely connected to their feature on Tweed, which we're going to write about in our Raven newsletter.
He's interesting, though, because he's at an interesting point, McConaughey.
Yeah.
Because he made five, he was known for like running around shirtless on beaches. He made like five romantic comedies in a row where he rarely wore a shirt. And now he's reinvented his career. Dallas Buyers Club.
Yeah.
Wolf of Wall Street. Magic Mike.
True Detective.
Yes.
Yeah. And the lines I like best, and this goes back to my anniversary and what I may or may not be doing today.
Yeah.
They asked him about his dad, and he said his dad was the biggest ham of them all.
Mm-hmm.
And then the interviewer goes, he died suddenly. And then he said,
my dad died of heart failure making love to my mum.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah, that's how I'd like to go.
On your 14th wedding anniversary.
Will you allow me...
it very difficult to do the Men in Blazers show next week, Rog.
Well, you don't need me. Would you allow me to revise my top three ways to die?
Yeah, go.
Because I revised them last week and I want to revise them again.
Okay.
Number three,
yeah,
in my sleep peacefully.
Uh-huh.
Number two, experiencing the after effects of the Brazilian walking spider bite.
Yeah.
The 24-hour thickening.
Yeah.
Number one, straight in at number one, Davey.
Mm-hmm.
Heart failure whilst wooing and courting my wife.
Whoa. I've never, ever met a man who loves his wife more than you love Mrs. B.
Goes back to those Foreigner lyrics, Dave. Can't stop now.
It's really
travelled so far.
It's really
a change this lonely life
thing. Before we get into the show, a special announcement.
Special announcement
about an upcoming Men in Blazers auction in honor of Veterans Day and all the fine men and women
who've
served this country. We're auctioning off the chance for you and a friend to visit our panic room.
To be our very first and possibly last ever audience members at the Men in Blazers show.
Where are they going to sit, Rog?
It's going to be like Cheers is filmed before a live studio
audience.
I know, but audience.
Still, where are they going to sit? There's no space for anyone.
We'll stand behind them like our guest.
We'll see. Anyway, so we're raising some money for veterans, which is really important, and giving people a chance to come to the world's least technically ambitious television program, Rog. All proceeds will go to the Wounded Warrior Project. This will be a live online auction, Rog. It begins Friday, October 31st, and ends November 9th on GivingWorks eBay. We'll be sure to share the link with you via our website and social channels as soon as we have it.
Wow. So what it means is,
yeah,
soon we're going to start this auction.
Yeah.
And if you bid and win,
yeah,
you can come down to the crap part of Soho.
Yeah.
You can come and watch us.
Yeah.
Shoot that evening show with the with a guest.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, we'll take you out for beer or tea.
So I'm a little torn here. I want to raise a lot of money for veterans. And at the same point, I don't want to under-deliver on the expectation of what the audience experience of being in the audience of the Men in Blazers show is going to be like.
It'll be like watching the crap on television, but worse.
Yeah, that's exactly my point. Okay, we've got a packed show today. We're going to analyse every caress, every hug, every tear of Louis van Gaal's rom-com with Jose Mourinho. We're going to marvel at Sam Allardyce's calm as the bubbles flew all around him. We're going to break down Luis Suarez's convenient return. Oh, at El Clasico, amazing the timing of his comeback. We're going to celebrate Jurgen Klinsmann's eyebrow-raising nomination as one of FIFA's Coaches of the Year. We're going to tend to your Ravens and welcome pod favourite GFOP and one of our favourite players in world football, US Women's National Team star Megan Rapinoe. Okay, Rog, it's time to open our Guinness. It's time to go to the football. Cheers, Rog.
It's a tweed.
Okay, we're at 9:38 of the way through the Premier League season. Rog, if this was a golf tournament, a four-round golf tournament, we wouldn't even be at the end of the first round. We'd be like sort of just coming off the 16th green, about to tee off on the 17th.
You'd
I'm seeing a
long,
demanding dogleg par four. But this is football, and the narrative, Rog, waiteth for no man. So let's delve straight in. Manchester United 1, Chelsea 1, Rog. The Premier League writers introduce the Van Gaal Mourinho bromance the world has been waiting for as United hold the league leaders to a draw at the Theatre of Dreams. In the 53rd minute, 36-year-old, I actually thought he was way older, Didier Drogba scored his first Premier League goal in 960 days since March 2012 to give Chelsea a 1-0 lead. But in the third minute of injury time, Branislav Ivanovic received his second yellow for grazing Angel Di Maria's leg.
His molecules, his leg molecules.
And on the ensuing free kick, Robin van Persie smashed home a rebound and sent the United faithful into a frenzy. We won a point!
Bravo, Manchester.
Yeah.
It was a fascinating bromance, Davey.
Yeah.
I mean, the roots of the relationship lie in Barcelona of the late 90s. Van Gaal was the coach. Mourinho was his, quote, number three assistant.
Uh-huh.
I'd love to have a number three assistant.
You don't?
Hmm?
Okay, go ahead.
I have a number one, two, and four.
Yeah, exactly. You've never had a number three.
Louis van Gaal.
Yeah.
I love this quote before the game. He said he has a, quote, iron shield that prevents him from being ruffled by Jose Mourinho's mind games. I think that's Dutch for, I use heavy starch in my underpants. But the two gents are at such pains to demonstrate their love, Davey. There were more PDAs than Tom Cruise and Katie Holmes in days of yore. What did you make of it all?
When Sir Alex was at Manchester United, when Mourinho was at Chelsea in his first tenure, I always felt that the affection and relationship between Jose Mourinho and Sir Alex was completely and utterly designed to just piss off Arsene Wenger. And I sort of have a feeling that this is a little bit by design, certainly for Mourinho, to just annoy his rivals.
You also don't think it's going to last, do you?
It can't possibly last, because these two are going to be in competition with each other.
This was possibly empowered by the fact that Jose Mourinho didn't see Louis van Gaal as a serious rival or his Manchester United team before kickoff, so could try and be this big man. But I found their televised tussles fascinating.
Perhaps this season, I don't think he sees him as a huge rival.
The more I watch these hugs, the more they look like hate hugs. I mean, Mourinho striding into van Gaal's little brick house that they have as a bench at Old Trafford. You know, I am invading your territory. I am fighting for superior body position. When you speak to politicians or politician speechwriters, they spent hours before television debate agonising, like a judo fight about who can get the better power move. And Mourinho reached high up on the shoulders. You called it the I could kill you if I wanted kind of
hello. Oh, it's very good. Anytime, if you're in an embrace with any other man and you touch his cheek, it is such a, oh, I'm going to have you killed by the Russians move.
Van Gaal countered by patronising slaps against the kidneys. He was working the body. Do you have a power move, David?
I don't really. But what I would say is that the relationships between powerful men are always very complicated. And I actually think there is some considerable affection between these two guys. But there's definitely a power play and a sense of ranking and a sense of teacher and pupil and a sort of a resentment from both sides at every moment, however much they love each other. What's your power move, Rod?
Well, I learned it off Barry Hearn.
Which is?
He taught it to me. It's highly effective. It's the snatch, grab and pull power move.
Oh, that's a good one.
Snatch the hand, grab it firmly, and then pull the whole person's body. So you almost pull them off balance. Try it. It's really disconcerting, and it works for Barry Hearn. It's worked for me in two occasions. I used it a lot at my wife's high school reunion that I had to go to. It's I save it. Oh, I only use it then. It's very, very menacing.
One of my ones actually is that I hate fist bumps. I really don't enjoy fist bumps. And so when anybody goes out to bump my fist,
I always grab the hand with my hand.
That's how I do. I do paper over rock and just grab it and look at them in the eyes like that is so pathetic.
I totally agree with that. Yeah. It annoys me. But it doesn't annoy me as much as Mourinho's scarf but no coat.
Really? Does that annoy you?
Yeah.
I thought it was a jaunty little look. And I loved how upset the British media got by that.
A jaunty look. It looked like he's been given a style makeover by Benedict Cumberbatch. it cannot be cold around your neck, but warm down below. Yeah. It's not absolute. It's just not possible.
He could be wearing undergarments, though. There.
Can you get back to us on that one, Chelsea Football Club PR people?
Branded with a logo somewhere.
Other storyline going into the game.
Yeah.
Chelsea's worst nightmares come true.
Which is?
The fraying raider of the lost art rope bridge that passes as Diego Costa's
hamstrings. Yeah. We're running out of horse placenta, Rog. There's not a lot left.
Unavailable. Drogba starts. And then for United, Falcao's muscle injury meant that the battering ram Fellaini was handed another start.
Yeah.
And he started brightly. I mean, he really, Mars Fabregas. Luke Shaw, brimming up and down the flanks. Yanishai buzzing around with the goal of moving that ball into RVP's feet. I found the game, David, particularly in the first half, to be a bit of a grim grind, yellow cards dispatched like candy in the Wonka factory.
Yeah, I think we've spoken about this. I think the game was a little bit better than you did. And I thought that both teams, in some ways, I'd say that this was for both teams, in many ways, both of their strongest performances this season, with some key players missing. Manchester United played with an intensity that we haven't really seen from them so far. And I thought Chelsea really displayed that strength which is going to make them difficult to beat in the Premier League this season.
It's so interesting because Man United played with a potency that was surprising. I mean, it was they that wrestled Terry and Ivanovic to the ground on the corner. The English Telegraph journalist at Henry Winter had tweeted, Ryan Shawcross, Mark Hughes, and Stoke City must be wondering about officials' consistency on this wrestling at corners. United can get away with it. Stoke, obviously not. It was very nip and tuck that first half, which is a euphemism for me of a game that's not easy on the eye. But I agree, this was United's most organised, most confident. But you also felt in that first half, Chelsea were playing well within themselves. And I imagine Mourinho just walking into that locker room at half-time and telling his players, this United side, they must have a mistake in them.
Yeah. I mean, Chelsea certainly never looked like losing at any point in this game. And it's something which just physically so strong all over the field.
Chelsea came out in that second half as if they knew they were going to score. Hazard had the first chance. He broke through on that one-on-one with De Gea.
Yeah.
What a save, David.
Fantastic save.
He almost taunted Hazard, De Gea. If you look at it, he wafts out his left hand as if to feint one way before diving to shut him down at the right.
Yeah.
Phenomenally confident, goalkeeping full of bravado, but United's respite was short-lived.
Yeah, from the ensuing corner comes in, and I think this is a very significant moment in Chelsea's season to see Didier Drogba score in the Premier League again. If they can get 5 or 6 goals like this from Didier Drogba. And this was a Didier Drogba
goal.
It was a goal of yore, Rog. Yes, helped over the line by Robin van Persie.
Clinical from RVP. Instinctive.
But this was Didier Drogba, you know, circa 2004, 2005.
I mean, leaving Raphael to mark Drogba, one Bluke is 5'8". The other, I think, how tall is Drogba?
6'2".
I mean, that was Smalls on Tools madness.
Yeah.
Fellaini clearly to blame because he should be marking absolutely everybody.
Yeah, that's true.
But I'm thrilled for Drogba.
Yeah.
I love old men done good stories.
Yeah.
His goal, it was like watching On Golden Pond. Found it very moving. We've seen this movie before was what I wrote in my game notes, David.
Yeah.
If I asked you for the final score when Chelsea went 1-0 up, would you have put money on a late breakaway Chelsea goal and 2-0?
I must say, I am pretty angry with myself for not sending out the tweet, which I literally started writing and then got carried away watching the game and didn't send, which was a reminder that in their previous visit to Manchester this season, Chelsea gave up an 86th-minute goal to end up with a draw.
To 10 men.
Yes, Manchester that I City. Still regard as a pretty good result. And that ultimately, a draw would still be a pretty good result. Doesn't mean I wasn't incredibly disappointed with what happened at the end of the game. But yes, you never saw Chelsea giving up a goal. They were in more control than they were against Manchester City. And it just, you know, there's too much quality in the Premier League. You're always likely to concede a goal from a set piece.
I mean, sad note is Juan Mata. It's impossible to feel good about his kind of slumbering presence in that second half if you have a heart that beats inside your body.
Yeah, but the Premier League writers had been writing the Van Gaal Mourinho relationship. They didn't have time to write the, you know, the amazing revenge story of Juan Mata
against
Jose Mourinho.
Seeing him sloop off knowing that Wayne Rooney, injury permitting, is about to come back and then he's most likely to see playing time drastically reduced. There's already rumours about a move to Italy for him. I feel terrible for that bloke. All that money United have spent on attacking prowess, and it was James Wilson who came on to replace him, which was really fascinating. And United found a way. Credit them, Davo. I have to credit. They had a tenacity. They had a doggedness. Did they deserve it? I'm not sure they did. I mean, Chelsea tried to put a sleeper hold on the game, and in this case, for once here, they were caught out.
I think Chelsea were the better team, but how much Van Gaal is learning about the Premier League very quickly with the deployment of Fellaini. This is a physical game in the Premier League. Chelsea are the most physical team in the Premier League. I would say even above Stoke, front to back, there is no more, side to side, there is no more physical team than Chelsea.
Matic
in this
league is the most physical team in the Premier League on his own.
He's a battering ram. You need a Fellaini in the middle, in the Premier League, a Fellaini playing well. This was one of the very best performances that I've seen Fellaini make for Manchester United. And I think that he's going to be very, very useful for this team. And Mata? I don't think so.
Tough call ultimately on Ivanovic. Was it a dive by Di Maria? Dive-ish?
It was dive-ish, but I still think it was idiotic. I don't think that ball was going anywhere. I know that they will, the Chelsea players, Chelsea manager will hide behind the quality of the decision. But as soon as I saw it happen, I was like screaming at Ivanovic, like, get away from him, get away from him, get away from him.
We got a great raven from Ben Rubin who says, right before the start of every game he officiates, does Phil Dowd stare at himself in the mirror and think, everyone out there is here just to see me?
I would just say in defence of Phil Dowd, I think that he's one of the very best refs in the league at taking a moment and thinking before he does what he does. It just is what happened just early on in the game, and it was a very physical game. He started handing out the cards, and then you just can't stop, and then he let some big things go.
The ironic thing in the Alanis Morissette sense of the word about that yellow card and the red card that came with it was that Ivanovic had been marking Fellaini all the way through the game, so he possibly would have eliminated or snuffed out the danger at the ensuing free kick.
Still no excuse. Gary Cahill was on him, and Gary Cahill got absolutely beaten by the Belgian.
Massive goal for United. Funnily enough, in the scheme of things, probably a bigger one for Manchester City. I found United's joy startling. United of old would not have been that elated about getting a 93rd-minute equaliser at home, Davey.
Yeah.
I mean, that was the kind of joy level, I imagine, in Manchester if New Order announced they were reuniting. But the joy was less about the point. I think it was more about the reclamation of a modicum of self-respect.
Yeah. No, I think it's true. And a good performance and well played, both teams. I do think Chelsea were marginally the better team, but I think very well played both teams. And I think the most significant thing about this game will ultimately not be the result. It will be that Chelsea have established that Didier Drogba can still score goals in the Premier League.
Grand-père.
Matic emerging more and more as just a player. You just cannot see him being taken apart in midfield. And Manchester United finding some performances, not just Fellaini, we should also say Luke Shaw. This was his first, I think, really not always consistent, but pretty strong performance for Manchester United. And the Chelsea defence starting to look tougher, starting to look more steely.
My only sadness was that Mourinho hadn't already unilaterally declared the game over and taken himself off down the tunnel.
Everybody was shocked by that.
I would have loved that. That would have been the perfect ending. What would he do? Would he scuttle back out again and take a bow? And I'd love that. 1 week, that is going to happen.
I don't know if he's ever gone down the tunnel 1-0 up in the final minute. We'll have to go and check. Maybe let us know.
One last word about United, David.
Yeah.
In fact, Sir Alex Ferguson has just released in paperback his, I think, 87th autobiography.
Yeah.
More volumes than Winston Churchill's for sure.
Yeah.
And he's added a new chapter in which he's rejected claims he left an ageing Manchester United, and he's tried to distance himself from David Moyes' appointment.
Mm-hmm.
I found the whole thing very unbecoming. It seems almost beneath Sir Alex, and I'm wondering what's driving it. To me, it's like watching Robert McNamara stung by regret and attempting to rewrite his legacy in the Errol Morris film,
yeah.
Fog of War.
Manchester United, Rog, they move up to eighth. With that point, I mean, a scrum of teams separated by just 4 points, going from 15th all the way up to 5th. Okay, the other Manchester team, Rog, West Ham 2, Manchester City 1. The Hammers, down the defending champions at a raucous Upton Park. Morgan Amalfitano put the home side up in the 21st minute. They doubled their lead in the 75th minute through a header from Senegalese striker Diafra Sakho. It's a mazy run, a blistering strike from David Silva, pulled one back for City, but the Irons held on. West Ham sits fourth in the table, Rog, and cities across Europe are bracing for Big Sam to hit the continent. Load up on your beer.
Oh, and your pies.
Yeah.
And your ham.
Yeah.
All the newspapers autopsied City and what went wrong, which is valid. They've got such a deep squad, so many massive names stuffed in there. They're defending champions, so much expectation. But for me, the headline in this game was that West Ham are very, very good.
Yeah.
It's no fluke. One of my favourite images of the weekend came about 54 minutes into this game. West Ham were in the lead. Sam Allardyce lay back in his seat, put his head behind his arms, let his tummy spill out over his pants. If you'd ever wondered what Big Sam looks like post-coital, wonder no more.
And not disturbed at all by all the bubbles.
America's so taken by the bubbles, Dave. You love Sam Allardyce with the bubbles.
I love him in the bubbles. He looks good, framed by bubbles.
Can you just explain the bubbles very quickly to America?
Well, the big West Ham song, We're Forever Blowing Bubbles, it's a song of sort of hope, but also an acceptance that life in the East End of London and life supporting West Ham is never easy. And that dreams, you always have big dreams, but then they always fall apart and they die. And
it's
they a, blow bubbles when they sing this
kind
song,
of song,
We're Forever Blowing Bubbles.
Foreigner would have written if they were, at Lobster Man tweeted this, hey men in blazers, is Lawrence Welk in charge of pre-match ceremonies for West Ham? If Foreigner had been produced by Lawrence Welk back in the day, that's what it would have been. But if you're actually at Upton Park, it's a very old school stadium. Everything smells faintly of kind of urine, spilt beer, and cheap hamburgers. It's very menacing. And then there's a second where they blow these bubbles. And
they sing this song. I mean, it's like only Liverpool. There are two songs in the Premier League. Liverpool, You'll Never Walk Alone. West Ham, We're Forever Blowing Bubbles. They are signature songs for those teams.
And when that song comes out, you will see men who have possibly done terrible things to other men, men who like the taste of their own blood in their own mouth. They suddenly become children, and they just get moist in the eye, and then as soon as the song finishes, it becomes deeply menacing again. I'll say, watching Sam Allardyce covered with bubbles, though, David, it's a bit too sinister for me. It's like imagining John Wayne Gacy in his Pogo the Clown outfit.
Yeah. Well, West Ham are playing terrific football. I don't think Manchester City will be the only top team to go down there to the Berlin and get taken apart. I think West Ham are going to take points of a lot of the top teams.
So
I think West Ham may be one of the top teams this season.
This is our discussion. I mean, there's so few football teams that are more thrilling to savour this season.
Yeah.
Down the flanks, down both flanks, with, in the middle, the key, Alex Song, with his shorts yanked up around his testicles like John Stockton. We debated, was it diaper? Was it a snuggie? Was it a pamper? Even Alexis Sanchez would look at Alex Song and say, what are you doing, man? You look ridiculous. At Fall Guys tweeted this to say, is it the way to distinguish ex-Barcelona failures? Short shorts are the Camp Nou's badge of exile. But Song bossed that midfield with courage and tenacity.
Yeah.
He's another one with strange body microsystems. He was sporting the gloves and short sleeves. It's like that women's fashion of wearing a roll neck sweater with no arms, which always completely confused me. But that goal came via Enner Valencia.
Yeah.
Gorgeous, gorgeous gentleman running up and down that flank. He actually ended up in the crowd like an NBA player.
Yeah.
While Morgan and Malfitano finished the thing. But I was shocked at the way City's defence disintegrated, David. They've had one clean sheet in their last eight Premier League games.
Yeah. Definitely. But there's some questions. Company is not the player he was,
Rog. On the slide.
He is not the player he was.
His reputation burns bright, but his tactical form seems to be erratic. And Mangala, yet to truly convince. I think for City, he's the new Di Michelis, who took time to gel. But Allardyce said afterwards that he was the guy they targeted. I think they leave it. Can you do a Sam Allardyce impression?
Can't really do Sam Allardyce, no. It's Northern. I don't do Northern people well, Rog. Don't do Northern people.
Is that
I can go Scottish.
Is that a policy
and I can
decision?
Do South.
Is that a policy
I can't
decision?
Do the middle. I'm doing a bit Burbigub. I can't do like, where's he from? Manchester, Bolton, somewhere up in that part
somewhere
of the world.
Somewhere near where I'm from.
I tell you, I can't do that accent.
I'd say, when I was little, my mum told me if I went cross-eyed and someone hit me on the head, my eyes would stick.
I'm so afraid of being Northern.
Yes, I don't know if it's medically true that if you go cross-eyed and someone hits you on the head, it may actually stick, which terrified me as a youth.
So I can do a bit of Geordie.
Are you scared?
I can do that, but I can't get can't go west. I can't go into Lancashire.
I think psychologically, you were afraid in case you get hit on the head and that accent sticks.
God, sky so close.
He said, I think they leave him exposed, Allardyce said of Mangala.
Yeah.
He's only just joined the Premier League. They don't protect him. The more and more you can get down the side of him with a space that Clichy leaves, the lad is not used to it. He's not been at the level for a long time. And you saw Man City trotting off at halftime, 1-0 down, shades of John Lovitz's Michael Dukakis on Saturday Night Live. I can't believe I'm losing to this guy. But a great Paul Carr stat. Halftime, City have lost the last seven. Turns out to be eight. Paul Carr's just had a baby girl.
Oh, congratulations,
Mazel
Paul Carr.
Mate.
His mind has just been blown. Forever.
His stat, they've lost eight now when they've been trailing at halftime, which is, you don't think of Man City as that kind of team. And indeed, they came at West Ham. City have got three ways of attacking you, essentially.
Yeah.
Kun Aguero pushing his turbo button to try and flabbergast you.
Yeah.
Number one. Number two, David Silva with the guile of a Spanish ninja trying to paper cut you to death.
Yeah.
And number three, if that fails, Toure will do his runaway wardrobe rolling downhill and try and squash you like a fly.
Yeah.
But little Kane, Silva's goal was absolutely exquisite. A combination of the crossbar and Adrian kept Aguero and Yaya out from close range. Aguero charged at them relentlessly. At times, City were guilty of trying a bit arsenally, David, in this one, walking into the net.
Yeah.
All of the attacking ultimately left City vulnerable on the counter.
Yeah.
I did love West Ham's second goal. Diafro Sacco, I think it was his seventh goal.
Yeah.
Possibly in seven games. The season of the unheralded mighty goal scorer. How many do you think you'd put in the net, David, if you were given a good run in the Premier League right now?
Oh, zero.
But I loved in this one how Joe Hart, his face when the goal, he forgot there was goal line technology for a second.
Yeah, he did.
And he tried to do the I'm complaining that I've been hard done to face.
Mm-hmm.
You can try and argue with your partner when you know you're not right. But you really can't complain with goal line technology. But I loved how he, for a moment, he tried to... Have you ever done that, Dave? Argue completely as if you were right when you know you're completely wrong.
God, well, you tell me, Rog.
I don't think you ever... You're a man who's surprisingly fair and
I
honest.
Think when I'm caught, like fair cop, like you're sort of done. You don't have a chance.
Should be goal line technology in every relationship.
I don't know, the question is like City, who, you know, I really presumed, looking at their strength and looking at them coming back as defending champions, we're going to be there or thereabouts this season. I'm starting to see some cracks that are worrying me. It's to do with that mental toughness. It's to do with like Vincent Kompany, Yaya even, not looking quite like the same players, seeming as though they're a little bit in decline. I really respect Pellegrini. I think it's bizarre. He sort of, you know, won the Premier League last year, and yet I think he's still underrated as a manager. I think he will adjust. I think he's got a big squad. I think he's going to sort out some of the things going on. But some alarming signs, I would say, in the sky blue part of Manchester.
Well, we've got to see more post-coital Allardyce.
Yeah.
In his press conference, it was not a lucky victory. It was well-deserved.
But it was, and not playing Sam Allardyce kind of football, Rog.
Well, he'd actually announced, he said something very interesting in that game post-conference. He said, me and Mourinho, we play differently in every game. He said, there's coaches like Rodgers and like Pellegrini who just keep doing their own thing. He said, he essentially implied, me and Mourinho, you often put those two together. We're tactical geniuses. We always adjust. He said, City couldn't live with us because of the quality of our play. Mm-hmm. West Ham for the Champions League, David? Question mark?
Well, look, they've got goal scorers. They've got some very good defenders, Rog. They've got some veterans. They've got some youth coming in. They've got a lot. Very difficult stadium for other teams to go and play at. An incredible atmosphere. They've travelled quite well this season so far. Only lost once away from home.
God, they were defensively so solid. James Collins. Yeah. Unbelievably.
Good player.
He's like,
good Premier League player.
If he was a basketball player, he'd be an incredible shot blocker.
Yeah.
They have defensive solidity. Adrian on unbelievable form. They have true pace. I've said it already. Ener Valencia. Mm-hmm. They've got a great goal scoring threat. I do not see why not. Russell Brand kissing Sam Allardyce in this post-match conference.
Disturbing.
Something we're going to have to see a lot of. Allardyce had the astonished look of a man who's 100% team Katy Perry. Rarely has something vegetarian been mixed up with something that's so clearly steak and potato.
That's very true. It's very, very true. Good for West Ham. It's exciting to see them playing so well in the Premier League, Rog. Liverpool, 0. Hull City, 0. A dazzling display of offensive ineptitude at Anfield. Can't believe we're saying that, Rog. Mario Balotelli started and continued to squander chances during a game in which Liverpool had 66% of the possession. The only winners, beIN Sport, who likely saw an increase in subscribers from fans hoping to cleanse their Premier League palate with El Clasico, which kicked off just minutes after this one ended.
Mario Balotelli starts again?
Yeah.
It's like Charlie Brown rushing towards a football held by Lucy.
Mm-hmm.
He's the footballing Robin Thicke in terms of career dives, Dave. Here's what I don't understand about Liverpool. Yes, they missed Daniel Sturridge.
And Robin Thicke's career dived? I didn't realise it had dived. Yeah. Blurred Lines was a big single.
I don't think he scored in 10 games.
Okay, got it. Go ahead.
His injury, Daniel Sturridge, cruel blow.
Yeah.
Not just for Liverpool fans, but I think for anyone who cares about English football. But Balotelli, we know he's not a like-for-like replacement. He's not the gent who stretches defences with speed and movement.
Mm-hmm.
And that old football conundrum that we talk about all the time, do you fit players into your system or do you play a system to the strengths of your players? Rodgers seems content to give Balot the same service every week, then chastise him, which we know from watching Balotelli is not really the way you get the best out of him. He's almost being set up to be scapegoat, Dave, as rumours of a quick January exit to Napoli abound.
Yeah, I also think that teams have figured out, you know, we've got a lot of these teams, like Hull City, a great example, teams that have become stronger in the Premier League this season. And I think teams have figured out how to play against Liverpool. They understand that the midfielders are going to take the ball, they're going to turn upfield, they're going to move quickly. And just, frankly, they're being counter-moved constantly, being dispossessed in midfield or being sort of sat behind. And Liverpool, whereas last season had an amazing knack for sort of finding the early goal, for breaking through, for playing from ahead, they just never really looked like breaking down teams.
It's true, they did. Their build-up play seemed to lack precision, and Sterling not able anymore to beat and pull and rip and tear his opponents out of shape on his own. But the eeriest part for me, it's not the lack of pace, the kind of pass and no move. It's the silence that's engulfed Anfield. It's like someone's pushed the mute button when you watch the
second
half of that.
They're in shock, Rog.
The silence is deafening. Mario made time to have a final whiff in front of goal, unmarked, with the game again on the line to be won. It was like watching a James Brown concert where someone hands him the mantle and he just chucks it on the floor dismissively. After winning 11 Premier League games in a row between February and April, Liverpool have won just 5 of the subsequent 12 matches. Time to start asking, Davo, was last season a blip, a fluke, a Suarez-inspired thickening?
Well, look, I do think that improvement and decline in teams is exponential because it's a team game. Suarez, no doubt, creates space, just, you know, creates 1% more space for one player, 2% more space for one player, 3% more for one player, and it multiplies exponentially and creates this offensive ability. Also, it's inspiring to watch him making those runs up in front of you. They're without Sturridge as well. That has definitely hurt them. Gerrard continues to get a little slower. His set-piece delivery, Rog, is still amazing. I think still worth picking for that reason. But they have declined quite quickly. You still feel that they could catch light, that, you know, goal scoring is infectious. Sturridge could come back, start knocking them in. Sterling could find an outlet. But I'd be worried about them defensively. So I know they didn't concede this weekend, but they just look shaky at the back as well, Rog.
David, one of the saddest and most poetic images of last week was when Brendan Rodgers revealed he'd been up at night until 4:30 a.m. alone, he said, in my kitchen. It wasn't that I couldn't sleep. I was just thinking of ways that I could make us better and improve certain aspects of our play. I imagine like Nighthawks comes to mind. I imagine him doing like lines of Sweet and Low, desperately trying to work it all out, David.
He's never alone in his kitchen, Roger. He's always got his self-portrait over his shoulder.
Favourite moment of that game, the cop choosing to remind Steve Bruce about the size of his head. Steve Bruce, he's got a fat head. Steve Bruce, he's got a fat head, they chanted. And then the whole boss, who I'm starting to love more every single week, Davo, he responded, he just lifted his suit jacket up and covered his own face. He's an everyman.
He is an everyman, Rog. Back down in London, one of the most remarkable games of the weekend, Rog. Tottenham 1, Newcastle 2. Newcastle wins its first away league game since March. Still can't figure out how. And they surge out of the relegation zone. Spurs struck first through an Emmanuel Adebayor 18th minute header. But the Magpies tallied twice in the second half, including a Sami Abiobi strike just seconds after.
Just say that again for Newcastle fans. A Sami Abiobi
strike. 6 seconds, the worst 6 seconds of Eric Dyer's life, Rog, just after the half began.
What a roller coaster of a week for Spurs fans. Yeah. Europa League, Rabona joy 1 minute, then the next minute they're driving
Harry
a clown
Kane
car.
In goal. Yeah.
Oh, I mean, let's talk about the Rabona for a quick second. Have you spent all week practicing yours, David?
I haven't, Rog.
It's an amazing move. It's almost inhuman. It's shocking whenever I watch a Rabona on a football field. If you don't know what it is, just Google it. It's like watching V when the aliens' lizard tongues first pop out of their human mouths. Pochettino, I loved his comments after that Europa League goal. He said, I never show emotion, even with a goal like that. I will enjoy it at home, in my bed.
Oh.
He's got a mental picture of Mr. Pochettino and Mrs. Pochettino cuddling to replays of the Lamella Rabona on the video.
It's going to be fairly similar to you tonight on the occasion of your 14th wedding anniversary.
I want to know what love is. 1-0 up.
Yeah.
Spurs. And then they just frittered the game limply away. Pod, you identified who was the weak point, Davey?
The Dire Wolf.
Yeah, poor. He had a tough week, Eric Dyer. The clocks went forward in England.
Yeah.
And Eric Dyer said that when the club secretary at Tottenham sent everyone an email saying that the hours go forward in England, he admitted to The Sun on Sunday, which, Eric, if you're listening, it's never a good idea to talk to that newspaper. He said, I thought she was kidding, making it up. I thought she was mocking me. He said, I was very young when I went to Portugal. I don't remember anything about living in England previously. All I know is from Portugal, living here in England feels very strange.
Wait a minute, do the clocks not change like in Portugal?
He said, they don't do that in Portugal. I thought she was having a joke at me. Nobody told me that when I signed. This man sounds like he was raised by wolves. He's like Brendan Fraser in Encino Man.
Also, did the clocks go forward or they went back? Spring forward, fall back.
I don't know what the hell it is. All I know is it's on wonky hours and this weekend's going to feel like crazy because the football's on a bonkers time, like 8:30 instead of 7:30.
It is. Only 4 hours ahead over there right now.
We're all going to get up. We're still going to get up super early and have to watch our crap instead of proper
Eric
football.
Dyer was not the only one guilty.
Oh, but
the
6 seconds,
Dave.
God, that was humiliating.
Yeah, it was terrible. And also, they were just, but I think the bigger thing, before we even get to the second half, Tottenham so outplayed Newcastle in the first half. How Tottenham were not more than one goal ahead at the end of the first half, I will never, ever understand.
So what is it?
They have no mental toughness. This is a team from top to bottom. By the way, including their owner, they have no mental toughness.
I agree with this. Zero. I agree with this emotionally. But how does this happen? Because when we say they have no mental toughness, we're talking about over a five-year span under about 87 managers
because
with about 873 central
midfielders. Because, preparation. Mental toughness is so much...
How does it get inculcated across eras?
But it's about so much about preparation. This is a team. Look where they are in their stadium situation, Rog. They might have to go to Milton Keynes for a couple of years. It is a... Everything in this club feels that it's like done at the last minute.
Milton Keynes is like, it's the equivalent of going deep into central Jersey.
Yes, they've gone, they're going to have to go way about because the Olympic Stadium won't be ready. They have so many years to plan and they don't plan. And I think that inculcates, that spreads throughout the whole club. And oh, it's so tough. I'm rather sympathetic towards Tottenham. I rather like Tottenham.
Fond of them.
I am fond of them.
I remember them from the 1970s and 80s when they were wearing Lecoq Sportif shirts before everyone was. They played with incredible flair. There was a certain suaveness to this team.
The colour of the shorts with the white shirts, so dark blue, Rog. It's been the darkest blue you can have before blue is black.
But to me, Spurs are becoming like the football equivalent of Robert Pattinson.
Yeah.
They're beautiful looking, but they're woefully insecure. In fact, I can imagine Robert Pattinson actually being signed by Spurs to play up front alongside Soldado. They're perpetually withering once a spotlight is turned on. And Pochettino, in his comments, the manager, is beginning to realise that the problems are not skill, they're not tactics, but they're mental. He said, we know I have to start working in this area. It's not the same as in physical or tactical situations. I'm going to have to work in different ways with this team. And I want to know how you work on psychological weakness, which is clearly endemic, built upon layer and layer of coaches coming in, coaches going out very quickly, players just sifting through
confidence,
over and over.
But also this sense, and my mate THS, I read you the email yesterday, he's a huge Spurs fan, described the players that they acquired, with the exception of Eriksen, as footballing subprime, which is so true. They bought lots of overvalued junk bonds of players not remotely worth their paper value. It's just going to be tough. It's going to be tough for them. Don't fully understand that football team, Rog. Christopher Baird, by the way, one of our GFOPs, tweeted at us, Embassy Davies, Men in Blazers, can I take a mulligan on supporting Spurs? I already support Cleveland teams. I don't need this. He sent me that halfway through the second half. Sunderland 0, Arsenal 2. Rog, Alexis Sanchez scores twice at the Stadium of Light, sending Sunderland tumbling back into the relegation zone. The Chilean now has 7 goals in his last 11 Arsenal appearances in all competitions. This scoreline doesn't tell the entire story, though, Rog. 2 moments of appalling Sunderland defending really helped Sanchez with those goals.
Yeah, we wanted to know how Sunderland would react after the 8-0,
the Benny Hill drubbing
against Southampton, and we didn't have to wait long. No. Wes Brown, only in Wes Brown's head will he understand what he was doing, kind of back pass, set up Sanchez for a well taken first. Mm-hmm. Wes Brown is less a football player to me, more a bomb that needs defusing, that has its wires clipped as the ticker goes down to 007.
Yeah.
Alexis Sanchez has scored in 7 for Arsenal of his last 11 matches. And they're not just goals, Davo. They're critical ones. 80% of his strikes have been equalisers, or they put Arsenal into the lead more than anyone. I think Berahino second, 71.4%.
Yeah.
And Ulloa is third at 60%. That gentleman, he's like a player, Sanchez, who's buttons are stuck on chip.
Yeah.
It seems to be, he likes a good chip more than Phil Mickelson, even. He's just, it's almost the only way that he can finish right now.
Yeah. Well, with his shorts up very, very high and going for that one leg up, one leg down variation.
After him and then Alex Song's short wearing, I expect Nate Silver to post an essay on the ratio of fly exposure to footballing excellence. Get on it, Nate, would you? At Andrew Cam tweeted us, add Chile to the build an American military base there list, please, Men in Blazers. God, I'd love that. Tell you who might love it too. Josie, still not getting a look after an 8-0 bum smacking. He came on in the 74th minute and trotted around, really, with his negative little body language. It's heartbreaking. And then the contractually obliged Vito Minone goalkeeping gaffe.
Yeah. Awful, Rog.
That's Arsenal's 4th goal in the 90th minute this season, David.
Yeah.
Arsene Wenger just turned 65. Uh-huh. How do you imagine he spent his birthday?
Reading poetry or philosophy.
I imagine him just sitting there all
getting
day.
Getting from A to B.
And an Edith Piaf kind of like album marathon.
Yeah, very true. QPR 2, Aston Villa, Rog. That was the Monday game. QPR score twice. I said it. QPR score twice. And into their opponent's goal, Rog.
God, Charlie Austin. How they've learned.
Charlie Austin, love this man, tallied on both sides of halftime to lift Aries men over a free-falling Villa side that's lost five straight, making me feel better about my pre-season prediction that they're going down.
Delighted for Charlie Austin.
Yeah.
Proving he can score at the Premier League level.
Uh-huh.
Bobby Zamora alongside him, playing as if he's wearing Samuel Eto'o cologne.
Yeah.
Aston Villa have failed to hit the net for over 8 hours, David. Mm-hmm. They've had 15 shots on target all season. I pity Americans who have followed Tom Hanks' lead and chosen to support that club. This game was so boring.
Yeah.
The highlight was a couple arguing. I think they were in the Villa end.
Mm-hmm.
And when the woman finally stormed off in the middle of the argument, the QPR fans entertained themselves by chanting en masse, "Where's your missus gone? Where's your missus gone?"
That's genius. There really has to be very little going on the football field to get into that. Southampton 1, Rog. Stoke City 0. Southampton about to go way up our running order. The Saints continue their blistering start, downing the Potters at St. Mary's. Senegalese striker, a big weekend for Senegalese strikers, Rog. Sadio Mane, a deadline day deal from Austrian champions Red Bull Salzburg, scored his first of the season. Southampton leapfrog City into second and sit 4 points adrift of the leaders, Chelsea, Rog.
Fine goal by Mane. Snap reaction, smart finish after Pele had hit the post. Got to say about Pelle and Tadic, their audition for a move to Liverpool is going extremely, extremely well. But for all of their goal-scoring exploits, Southampton have been defensively superb. Five goals they've leaked in the league this season.
It's amazing, Rog. Yeah, they scored the second most goals in the Premier League behind Chelsea, but they've conceded fewer than anyone.
Is it going to last, David? Let's ask the West Ham question, Southampton style.
Well, I must say, I think it's even better for Southampton than it is for West Ham United because of that defensive record. Teams that defend well very often continue to defend well. They've got a great keeper. They've got great backs. They've got a great spine. They're just good all over the field.
I think they'd only conceded 3 goals at this stage last season and they fell away. I've got a feeling it's not going to last for them. This whole thing smells of last season. The big teams are conditioned to start gelling in November, around now really. And at the end of the month, Southampton play City, Arsenal, and then Louis van Gaal's rejuvenated, possibly Manchester United. And I guess the acid test is, where will they be then?
Certainly last year, they seemed to win with a lot of flair. This year, they're winning with a lot of old-school Premier League qualities. Great defending, very good striker play, Rog. And getting a lot of goals from Graziano Pella, without a doubt. Okay, Swansea City 2, Leicester City 0. Rog, the Swans stop a 5-game winless streak thanks to 2 Wilfred Bony goals. After a formidable start, the Foxes are now in 17th place, just 1 point out of the relegation zone.
Oh, Sigurdsson to Bony, the flick, the give and the go, truly a moment of wow. I must say, Leicester's defence gave Swansea so much room in which to manoeuvre.
Yeah.
4 in 3 games now for Bony.
Mm-hmm.
You love his goal celebrations.
I do, because they're entertaining. They don't look that celebratory, though, Rog. They look very controlled, highly rehearsed.
They look some kind of bizarre tribute to Carlton on Fresh Prince.
Yeah.
He cannot be that bad a dancer, Wilfred Bony, in real life.
Yeah. You have to be good at dancing to dance that badly. West Brom 2, Crystal Palace 2. The Baggies snatch a point after falling behind 2-0 at the Hawthorns. The game-time goal came courtesy of a Saido Berahino injury-time penalty. The England under-21 striker, probably the England striker, now has 7 league goals, Rog.
Oh, scored by Berahino, but it was off a penalty won by Victor Anachebe.
Yeah.
Few better, utterly, utterly, unredeemably crap footballers in the Premier League. Berahino, interestingly.
Formerly of Everton, we should say.
Interestingly, celebrated with jazz hands. It's catching on. Great tweet about Hangeland from at Peachy T. Corinum. He said, is Hangeland his real name, or is it an endorsement deal for a South London closet supply concern?
Yeah. Burnley 1, Everton 3, Rog. Two goals from the old man. Good weekend for old men, Rog. Samuel Eto'o and one from Romelu Lukaku send the Toffees into the top half of the table. Burnley, meanwhile, remain the only winless team in the top four tiers of English football.
God, Everton's first goal.
Yeah.
One end to another in 10 passes by 9 players. Samuel Eto'o was actually involved in 3 phases, including the coup de grace.
Yeah.
And then Lukaku giveth and Lukaku taketh away. He quickly gifted Burnley an equaliser and then scored the go-ahead goal himself. Burnley, in truth, made Everton struggle in that second half. It all felt a bit like the Leicester game, where Everton just threw away a lead late. Mm-hmm. And then Eto'o scored a magical, swivelling smash. 4 goals in 5 starts for him. Mm-hmm. And can we know, how do you feel when you see it? Because I will imagine Chelsea fans do not recognise this man in his confident body language, his energy on the field.
I think he was quite good last season. He just didn't get many chances, Rog.
Because to me, he still looks like he's slumming it in an Everton jersey. When I see him run on, it's like seeing Megan Fox in a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle movie. But rarely, and this is what I love about this whole Everton Samuel Eto'o thing, is that rarely has he been more loved so unequivocally. And he's played at Inter, and he's played at Barcelona. But the Everton fans absolutely adore him. They finished off by singing, "You sign Balotelli, we'll sign Samuel Eto'o, Samuel Eto'o, Samuel Eto'o." That was the chant from the Evertonians, just taking great pleasure in the 3 points, but probably even more pleasure in Liverpool's demise. Talking about demises, there was a beautiful interview with Sean Dyche. I'd recommend everybody read it. The Burnley manager, how would you describe him?
Ginger.
Slightly menacing.
Yeah, he does look threatening. He looks like a bouncer at some, probably a Burnley nightclub.
He did. It's like. Probably where they found him. Yeah. They did a lovely interview with the Irish Independent, and they asked him how he copes with managing the Premier League team with the smallest budget. And a lot of what he talked about, I thought, were lessons for life, not just about football. They transcend football. He said, if you're constantly looking for negativity and trouble, you'll find it. On the other hand, if you're constantly looking for positivity and ways of improving, if you search around, you'll find them. I thought I was listening to you, David.
So, Rog, we talked yesterday about building a mood table for the Premier League, like building a table based on how fans are feeling about the, you know, the prospects for their team. So on Everton, you know, they're now sitting in 9th place. Where's your mood on Everton? Is 9th a fair place? Do you think they're coming back? Do you think you're feeling more like 5th in mood?
Have you ever had a septic wound with flapping skin?
Yes.
That's what I feel the Europa League is for Everton Football Club. And until we're out of that, and I know it's not a popular position, because a lot of our fans love going to Lille and having the crap kicked out of them by local constabulary members with nothing better to do. Until we are out of the Europa League, I think this season would be so much fuller of promise if we were not in that there. But I think in your mood league table, I know who's bottom for you right now. You said so yesterday.
Liverpool, Rog. I think the fans are just so shocked. It's why they're so silent watching their teams. I think they're feeling very grim about the team. I think they know they'll come back, but they're not feeling very strong about that team. And yet they're sitting in 7th place with a scrum of teams on 14 points, Rog. In MLS news, in an MLS news, as if the Premier League wasn't enough, a feast of football happenings here at home, Rog. Seattle Sounders, the an Seattle Sounders, defeated an LA Galaxy 2-0 this Saturday to claim an MLS's Supporters Shield.
Yes,
already won the US Open Cup this season. If the Sounders win an MLS Cup, they'll be the first team in history to win all 3.
Well, and with Obafemi Martins and Clint Dempsey, they've really propelled that team. I'll say MLS and filmmakers making a fly-on-the-wall film about Landon Donovan.
Yeah.
Are praying for a Western Conference Finals clash between them and the LA Galaxy.
Any filmmakers you can think of, Rog, who would be praying for that?
One who looks a bit like the Ukrainian Prime Minister.
Yeah.
But good luck to Real Salt Lake and our hair hero, Kyle Beckham. Uh-huh. May they dark horse threaten.
How do you feel about the Supporters' Shield, Rog?
I think you either have a playoff-driven thing.
Yeah.
Or you have a league. And I find giving a trophy to the winner of the league, I find it a bit underwhelming.
Yeah, it's interesting. I completely
agree. It was a leading question.
I completely agree with you.
You either do one or the other. There's very little to celebrate.
Rog, big news also. The day, or big rumours, the day after the Sounders win, English newspaper The Mirror, Rog, reported that swashbuckling American striker Clint Dempsey could be heading back to England on loan, a move his agent has since denied.
Yeah, I think it's to, in the rumour, Stoke City, Aston Villa, Queen's Park Rangers said to be vying for his services. When I read that article, all I thought about, Davo, was Klinsmann effect. I thought back to the Klinsmann-Don Garber argument, which has died off a little bit, I'm guessing, until the US play again in the international break, when no doubt Klinsmann will be asked again and no doubt he'll speak his mind on the subject. But to me, this was a reflection of what Jürgen's trying to do behind the scenes. And Clint, if he wants to be part of this next World Cup cycle, will do as is inferred.
We'll get back to Klinsmann in a second, Rog. But we should give a shout out to Bradley Wright Phillips. He scored twice in the New York Red Bulls season finale Sunday to tie the league single season scoring record of 27. Chris Wondolowski and Roy Lassiter have also had 27 goal seasons in 2012 and 1996, respectively. Well done, Bradley Wright Phillips. Could he get called up by England, Rog? He's been ignored for most of his career by England.
No.
Never. Okay. Finally, Jürgen...
He's too good for England.
Yeah, finally, Rog, Jürgen Klinsmann. After a narrative-soaked year in which the German marched the USA out of Brazil's group of death and had spats with America's soccer establishment, namely Don Garber and Landon Donovan, Rog, the Von Trapp's leader has been named a candidate for FIFA Coach of the Year. Quite an achievement.
It's very generous, I must say, putting Jürgen on that list. He must have just edged out David Moyes, I imagine. but if I were Jorge Luis Pinto of Costa Rica, or our own beloved Dry, Wet and Miguel Herrera, I'd feel like I deserved, after the World Cup, to push Jürgen for that nomination, just if you look at CONCACAF. But then I thought about it a bit more, Davo, and I think Jürgen might have got the nod just because of they wanted to have a nomination for best costume design, like the Oscars. They also did the 23-man player list for FIFA Ballon d'Or.
Yeah.
And the one very stark omission, Luis Suarez.
Wow.
Conveniently omitted. Even more
shocking.
Well,
he bites people, Rog. That's probably the reason.
Well, he bit people in 2013 and he still got nominated. But even more shocking, Everton's Stephen Naismith not on there.
Yeah.
What the WTF, Sepp Blatter.
Yeah, Scottish Messi.
Though in his defence, you can't vote for what you can't see, David.
Okay, Rog, our guest today, one of American soccer's bona fide stars. Sunday, she was part of a US women's national team that battered Costa Rica 6-0 to win the CONCACAF championship.
CONCACAF thunder.
She's a beguiling winger with an avant-garde haircut and, most importantly, a GFOP. We welcome back to the pod one of our favourite guests ever, Rog, Megan Rapinoe.
Hello, guys. Thank you for having me on.
Oh, we're delighted to have you.
We'll have you on anytime. I've got to say, your intelligence, your fluidity, your courage, there's something about you that's very, very Everton Football Club to me, Megan.
stop trying to recruit her, Rog.
This year, Everton?
Oh, every year, Everton.
I like it.
Every single year. 6-0 win. The CONCACAF Women's Championship crown is in your grasp.
Yeah.
The World Cup. We call it the World Cup. We call the other one that happened in Brazil the Men's World Cup.
Yeah.
On the horizon in Canada. Big story going in is the turf. Do you imagine this is a problem that's going to resolve itself, Megan?
I really hope so. I do hope so. It's frustrating because I really do think it's purely a money issue, and if obviously we know FIFA has that, and it's very much within their control, and I hope that they do the right thing. I feel it's a bit embarrassing for them also, so hopefully they wouldn't want that to be on their record, but I guess there's a lot of other embarrassing
I was going
to
say, FIFA
really
seems so terrified of embarrassment, Megan.
You just use FIFA and do the right thing. In the same time, Sepp Blatter, he said, you know, who is Marta? He didn't recognise her. He says the women's game would be better with tighter shorts. People would find it more acceptable. What do you think? Every time he opens his mouth, I always want to ask a professional woman soccer player, how would world football be different if a woman ran it?
Oh, I mean, I think a lot different. I guess just to even have... someone who even thinks of women's football first, or who even thinks that
puts it on the same level, perhaps.
The audacity to think that would be great. Not to say that, you know, there would be millions of more dollars or, you know, massive changes on the ground, but I think that just someone who actually thinks that the games are equal, I think that it would make a massive difference. There's plenty of money in football, and it's something that the women's game needs, really, to get off the ground with these leagues, with these tournaments, and it's unfortunate that they have billions of dollars in their nonprofit bank that they're unwilling to spend on that.
How are you feeling about the squad right now? How are you feeling? What is the current status?
I'm feeling good. I'm feeling really good. Coming off this Punk Cup tournament, it was a challenging tournament in a lot of ways. These teams haven't always sat back on us, but they really did this tournament. Most teams just, you know, sat in their own 18. It was difficult to break down, and we haven't faced that all that much. I think we'll start facing it more. I think these teams are becoming much more tactically intelligent and just realizing they can't come out on us.
They're going to park the bus.
Our transition game is too tough. So it was tough in a lot of ways and challenged us in different ways. I feel like the final was kind of a good ending on a good note for us and doing a lot of things that, you know, ultimately I think will be really dangerous come World Cup time.
As you look to Canada, who do you see as a threat? I'm a big fan of Louise and Nassib and the French team.
Yeah, the French are very dangerous, I think. I think that, and I hope they're still lacking a little bit in their confidence, but I get the sense, you know, they haven't been one of the top players on the world stage for that long, and I think that, you know, they're figuring out kind of how to be there and how to be dominant and how to bring it every time. But technically and tactically, they have what, you know, the best teams in the world have, and in some cases better. I think just their mentality and just believing in themselves to know that they can pull it off is something that they're working on, but I think that they know now that they're right up there with the best teams in the world, and if they pull it all together, they'll be a scary team, I think.
And when you look at the best teams in the world, when you think about who the main competition is for the U.S., who do you think that is?
I feel like Germany, always.
Always Germany.
Japan, the last 4 or 5 years. I think of us as one of the best teams. I think of France as one of the best teams. But I think the bar is raising everywhere. You know, I think in the past it's been, you know, top 3, 4, 5, 6 teams have been totally dominant. But I think that the next tier of teams are coming up really strong and are going to give people fits. And on the day, I think that those teams can really, you know, give some of the quote-unquote top teams a real run for their money. And I think on that day can beat them. Whereas before, I didn't think that those kind of second-tier teams could give the top teams, you know, the Swedens, the Germanys, the U.S.'s, a real run. But I think that it's closing much quickly now.
I mean, last World Cup, we loved your tactical play. We loved your fluidity. We loved your crossing. But we also loved your goal celebrations. You sang in front of the world. You pretended to mime Born in the USA. You kicked corner flags. You slid around the field. Can you talk about the training ground and some of the kind of the goal celebrations that you've been working very hard on, Megan, with 2015 on the horizon? Are you going to be bringing the horror back?
Yes, I mean, absolutely. I mean, I think no one can challenge my work ethic in terms of my goal celebrations across the globe.
All I'll tell you is,
I just get so excited. I just freak out. It's like no matter if I'm scoring or someone else is scoring, especially on a big stage like that when it means so much, I just freak out.
We don't want to stop you. Look at Mario Balotelli's Euro 2012 muscle flex.
Yeah, that's a good one.
We'd also love you to mime eating a pie after you score a really
controversial
goal.
And Diego Costa's jazz hands can always be a great inspiration. We'd like to see some Megan Rapinoe jazz hands. You know, your old friend Heather O'Reilly.
GFOP.
GFOP. She has been tweeting back and forth with us today, just giving us all kinds of great stuff to ask you about. So at Men in Blazers, she said, ask her to define getting weird. That's in quote marks. And let her best explain how she gets weird on the field. Okay, what's getting weird?
Getting weird is, well, I feel like, you know, him and I played together for a long time. So on and off the field, we've had some really weird moments, just as many on the field weird moments. You know, we went through a period of time where basically Hale was almost leashed to the sideline. She was literally not allowed to come infield.
And couldn't she developed cut
this. She couldn't cut inside. She definitely has the ability to do that, but she was restricted to do that. I won't name names who that was. But and so she developed this really weird hip thing where she would her left hip was just so off because she never used her left foot. Getting weird generally is just go out there, get as weird as possible on the other team, do as many, I guess, productive things. Other people would say, hey, go out there and have a good game, play well, do your thing. That's not going to cut it with me and Heyo. We got to get weird on them. We got to do some weird things.
Muscle confusion. It's like chaos theory. Yeah. You're going to confuse them by getting weird. We need to get weird.
It is chaos theory.
We need to get weird.
A lot more. Do you watch bloke soccer? Do you have a team that you cheer for?
In
the English Premier League
or MLS?
In the MLS, I mean, I'm living in Seattle now, so they're fun to watch. I mean, I'm also, obviously very connected to Portland too, so I can't not root for the Timbers, but then I can't root for both of them. So
yeah.
That gets a little sticky.
Big rival.
Megan Rapinoe is a woman at war with herself.
Yeah, I know.
So let's go to the English Premier League.
Yeah, this is Rog basically soliciting for you to be an Everton fan. I just want to make that clear.
I mean, I do like Everton. You know, Tim plays there, and Landon had a good stint there.
He has risen.
So it's always fun to see our American boys over there and see them play. I love Stu Holden, so you got to root for those Wanderers time to time.
Your haircut twin.
Yeah, I'm a haircut twin. I love them. Oh, gosh, I don't really have one team. No, I don't really have one team.
I think you do. We'll talk about it off the record, Everton. So a bunch of questions came in for you from our listeners. At Morgan Lozano, at Empino, what actress would play you in your inevitable biopic? Not, I'll insert inevitable there. Yeah. Also, I think you're the by the way. That was how they concluded that. Those are there.
You inserted that last part? Or
yeah.
No. Morgan supplied the last kind words. Who would you want to play you if you are going to be producing this? It's definitely executive producing.
Well, I love Tilda Swinton.
Oh. We just had her on a TV show. She's amazing, Tilda Swinton.
She's amazing. She's so wild looking. Those green eyes. And she's like kind of freaky looking, but
yeah,
I've got to tell you, I've seen her play. Her crosses don't often beat the first defender.
What is it with you? I thought you said you've seen her play, and I thought suddenly you're talking about plays. But you mean you've seen her play football?
Yeah, I've got a short list for your people that I put together.
I bet you Tilda Swinton gets weird on a football field.
Michelle Williams.
Yeah, a good idea.
Oh, good one.
Carey Mulligan.
Yeah, another good idea.
Shailene Woodley. She's got range.
She's going to win the Academy Award.
And the obvious one, Mia Farrow.
Mia Farrow.
Mia Farrow. Throwback.
That's brilliant. Do you love movies, Megan?
I do.
Because Tilda Swinton, I would say that's an unorthodox choice for... we talk to soccer players all the time, and they rarely come up with something as obscure. I would say that's relatively obscure as Tilda Swinton.
Yeah, she's one of my favorite actresses. I think she's amazing.
Wow.
Well, if she's to play you in a film, and this film includes the year kind of ahead, the next 12 months, can you just write the script for us a little bit to rip off Ian Dart? What do you project for yourself? What are you telling yourself about the year ahead and what you would like to happen as you envision the kind of future?
Ooh, good one. I mean, it seems so long until the World Cup, but it's definitely going to fly by. I think, last World Cup, I was very happy to be there, and not so much like, oh, I'm just happy to be here, but I think that I kind of have a gauge of what it's like to be in World Cup and what I want my performances to look like. And I mean, of course, I want to be, an important member of the team. I want to be the most dominant player that I can be, and, hopefully be, starting every game and playing most of the minutes and helping my team. I mean, I hope I score some goals too. It's like, everybody's like, oh, I just want to help the team. Like, no, I want to score some goals. Definitely, I want to have some assists. That would be great. It's always fun to score goals. I don't score that many, mostly because Abby's greedy. I was like, I was going to get to that header, and she stole them.
Yeah.
And like, I'm right there.
Yeah, how about some barely legal tackles? I love the idea of some barely legal tackles.
Yeah, fairly legal tackles. I actually got a yellow card last night for just the old, the old hand flip up, like, towards the ref, kind of like, whatever. More like, yeah. I don't know. It didn't seem more aggressive than I normally do.
You didn't put a W. You didn't put the W up to your forehead and do it.
No.
Or whatever.
No. Okay. No, well, I didn't. I just did the old hand flip, and she did not appreciate it.
We appreciated it. We also really admired Jill Ellis, the coach of the U.S. women's national team, Portsmouth-born.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of the English about her, although she's an American citizen in a way we both aspire to be. What does she say to you? What message has she delivered after you brought back the CONCACAF crown?
I think that she was really proud of our progression through the tournament. I think early on, she was probably a little frustrated. I think that we weren't playing as well as we could have, but I think in that game we saw some glimpses of, I think, how good this team can be and the style that we want to play. I think she was proud of that, and I think she's really excited. I feel like there's a lot of excitement. I mean, of course, naturally that we, you know, qualified for the World Cup and won the tournament, and I think didn't even concede one shot. So we had a pretty dominant performance.
Wow.
So I think there's just a lot of excitement going forward and knowing that this team could be really special.
Well, it is special, Megan. Can't thank you enough. Roger and I, both fathers of soccer playing and watching daughters. We cannot wait for the World Cup next summer. It's going to be an inspiration to both of us.
It's going to be absolutely massive, and the US women's national team are going to be the dominant part of that story, we hope and we pray.
I think this is going to be another huge World Cup in America. I think this is going to be a tipping point. Once again, we sort of had it back in 99. I think we're going to see it again happen for women's football in this country. So thank you so much, Megan. Next time you're in New York, please let us know. We want you on our TV show so badly. We want you in the panic room, in the crap part of
Soho. I got to get in there.
Yeah.
I got to get in there.
We want it.
The Tilda Swinton of women's football.
There she is, Megan Rapinoe. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Megan.
Thank you so much for having me on. I'll be back on every day from here on out.
Oh, I love that lady, Rog.
Oh, Dave, she is, I would say, Carl Beckerman and Megan Rapinoe up there for me for the two Americans I most savour when they take the field in an American jersey.
Yeah, totally agree. Similar players as well in many regards. On to your Ravens from Jorge Salvas in San Antonio, Texas. Positive and toilet. While this weekend's big game might have been the US Women 3, Mexico 0, I will have to admit I did enjoy every second of El Clasico. Real Madrid 3, Barcelona 1. Did you watch and what lessons did you learn?
Watch that game. Qatar Airlines against Emirates Airlines. Found it beautiful. It was football's first ever 1 billion euro match, David.
Wow.
What did we learn from the game? The key learning for me was that Cristiano Ronaldo has the best, I am going to totally blank you, handshake.
Power move. Yeah, that's his power move.
He shook hands with both Luis Suarez and then Lionel Messi as if he'd never, ever, ever seen them before. I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't
know who they were.
I have one of those. Again, I used it a lot during my wife's high school reunion. Mm-hmm. I just iced all comers. Suarez in a Barca jersey. Looks like Zlatan in an Everton jersey when I sign him on EA Sports FIFA. His ban ended conveniently midnight on Friday night, 18 hours before the Clásico. It's 4 months and a day since he chomped his Anne Hathaway incisors into Giorgio Cellini at the World Cup. That has gone quickly, Dave. I used to feel that Barcelona against Real Madrid was good guys against the bad guys. The Xavis and Iniestas against the Ronaldos and Pepes. It was like seeing a bunch of accountants have a fight with a bunch of wrestling heels. But I must say, Luis Suarez's signing has thrown a complete wrench in that. Suarez, to me, is very, very Real Madrid. Just as James is he seems very Barcelona. 3 minutes in, Suarez created space out of nothing. Neymar finished with ruthlessness. And he scored too early, Dave.
Yes.
Real Madrid was shocked into life as if they'd been stung by a duckbill platypus. Ronaldo, Dave, I don't understand him. He's had more hair removed than I have on my body currently.
he's a show pony, Rog. That's just his thing. You've got to live with it.
Well, what I loved when he converted the penalty, they cut to his girlfriend in the stands and someone had to prod her in the back so she could be told when to clap. Pepe scored the second with his evil noggin, the third by Benzema. Beautiful, beautiful counter-attacking masterpiece. La Liga, to me, it's like one of the three cities across the narrow sea. It's a slice of magic, which is totally beguiling. And Sid Lowe in The Guardian, the great Spanish football writer, he you wrote, and this sums up the game best.
No pair of teams have been so successful, and no other clash has the combination of ingredients, the socio-political significance, symbolism, history, support base, financial muscle and power.
Apart from the LA Galaxy against the Seattle Sounders, that's what he meant to add, but must have got edited out.
The winner of the coveted Guinness Men in Blazers Poet, Philosopher, Soccer Scribe, Raven of the Week is Davis Craig. What a great American name, Rog. Rog and Davo, at the beginning of the season, my friend, an annoyingly loyal Liverpool fan, and my girlfriend conspired to purchase me a Liverpool jersey. Mario Balotelli has been my favourite player since Robbie Savage retired, and Joey Barton turned even more crap. Naturally, my friend saw this signing as an opportunity to pull me into Liverpool fandom, since I've been rooting for championship teams and Premier League bottom dwellers Blackburn and QPR for nearly a decade. A few weeks ago, I watched the games in a Chapel Hill, North Carolina bar on Saturday.
Beautiful city.
And saw Liverpool lose 1-0 to Aston Villa.
Beautiful school.
Soccer soon blended into college football, which segued into going out for a drink with a few friends.
Segued into what?
I've been wearing this Balotelli shirt the whole day. Never in my life have I had more strangers approach me in a hostile manner. Every one of them talking trash to me like I'd taken their sisters out, had my fun, and never called again. On one hand, I was very annoyed, especially when a Manchester United fan called me a bandwagoner. On the other hand, it made me incredibly hopeful for the future of the sport in America. Here were over a dozen male 18 to 30-year-olds who took time out of their evenings to rudely discuss their soccer opinions and loyalties with an unsuspecting guy in a shirt someone else bought for him. Is this another sign of the growth of the sport in the US, or was I just in the right place at the right time in the right jersey? Abrigado, rock on, mate, Davis.
Whoa, David.
I think it is a sign of a growing American fandom and culture. It's actually the most, and I'm a positive person, Roger. Yeah. It's one of the most positive things I've ever read or heard about the future of the sport in America.
I think, but I also feel like there's some context that we're missing.
Yeah.
Davis, had you taken out their sisters? Had you fun? I never called. I feel like that's the one piece of information we need a yes or no or maybe answer on.
Well, he certainly has taken someone's sister out at some point, just to understand those phrases. Very good. Congratulations. A special Guinness. Raven
Guinness
of the Week
Guinness
patch on its way to you. Your weekend looks like this, Rog. On Saturday, 8:45 a.m. Newcastle versus Liverpool. 11 a.m. Saturday, Chelsea versus Queen's Park Rangers. That fixture has some previous, Rog. At 8:30 a.m. Sunday, Manchester City versus Manchester United. Saturday at 8, it's an LA Galaxy versus an Real Salt Lake in the first leg of an MLS Western Conference semifinals. All games on the NBC family of networks. Many ways to connect to us. One is through our Amazon Emporium. Helps keep the show going anytime you go on Amazon, for items big or small. Just click off the Emporium page, and Men in Blazers gets a tiny percentage that allows us to cover the cost of creating this podcast. What are you putting in the Amazon Emporium this week, Rod?
I do Morning Joe, David.
You do?
As you know.
Faithfully, every Monday.
The Green Room, 7:50. It's full of, it's like a Star Wars bar of senators and congressmen and one random football bloke. And I met a guy this week who had an incredibly strong, bone-crushing handshake.
Wow, power move.
Turned out to be former CIA agent turned journalist Robert Baer. His were the books that were turned into Syriana. And he's got a new book coming out, which I read overnight. It was phenomenal. It's called Perfect Kill, 21 Laws for Assassins. And it's quite a gut punch of a read. He analyzes a history of assassination from stealth strikes to drone strikes. And it's really a fascinating meditation on political murder. A fortress is taken most easily from within, David.
Well, Rog, for me, it's also another book, but this is comparatively the level of my reading versus yours. Just a couple of weeks until I journey down to Tennessee to pick up the GDOP. We're going to announce next week, Rog, the winning name of the GDOP. Only my children know what it is.
We don't know what the prize is yet, David.
No, we've still got to figure out the prize.
It's going to be something unbelievable.
It must be something unbelievable. It's the Labrador Retriever Handbook, Rog, from Barron's. I'm reading this book, enjoying every single part of it. Finding out everything about the history, the rituals, the needs, the personality traits, the training of a Labrador puppy.
What's your biggest learning so far?
I've got exactly the right dog for my personality and for my kids and for my family.
I was thinking about buying a Bernese Mountain Dog recently because I read in a book that they're never happier than when pulling small cheese carts to market.
You love cheese.
I love a cheese, love cheese.
The interesting thing about the Labrador, Rog, is it really sort of started growing as a breed in America, in Newfoundland. They used to help the local fishermen, lived in their dories, helped them with their fishing tasks. Then some English aristocrat in the 1820s saw them in some port in Dorset and decided these would be perfect dogs for the English aristocracy. It started importing them back from the New World. The breed grew up in Britain. Then Americans decided they wanted them back. So it's something American that was taken by Britain and has now come back to America.
Somewhere
again.
In there is a thinly veiled metaphor for the Men in Blazers story, David.
I feel like Jürgen would be happy about it somehow. That's really what I feel. Other ways to connect to us, Rog, meninblazers.wikispaces.com/a wonder of the modern world. Also, go to www.meninblazers.com, our website, find out everything about us there, lots of content. Follow us on Twitter, at Embassy Davies, at Rog Bennett, at Men in Blazers, on Instagram, at Men in Blazers. Like us on Facebook. We've got a subreddit, Rog. It's maintained by GFOP Akshay. That's at reddit.com/r/meninblazers. Email us, meninblazers@gmail.com. Send your ravens.
We try
to
and
the
answer every single
part
one of them.
Of Soho.
Try.
Vendorpunk, Rog.
War pig.
Who wants to sex Mutombo?
Explosion.
Courage.
Size the day.
Is that your analysis?
To tweed.
Abrigado. Rock on, mate.
Kung fu fight in America. Love you, David.
Love you, Rog. Happy anniversary.
Woof, woof.
And to Mrs. B.
Woof, woof.